Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Runs World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today's guest is record-breaking trail runner Elsie Davis, who's just got the winter Bob Graham round, so good time to chat to her.
Casual day out.
It's the midwinter Bob, isn't it? I didn't realise before chatting to her that there was a midwinter and a winter, in case the winter's a little bit too easy.
Yeah, like if you went broad spectrum winter and everyone was just like, I've got the winter record, you can just like sidle in and just be like, I've actually got the midwinter.
Yeah.
It's the hardest one. Yeah. You're welcome.
Doing this stuff in November doesn't count.
Yeah, right.
It didn't sound fun, did it? But we'll let the listener decide whether
you're not convinced by the kind of trail stuff.
I don't think you're the person to really pass judgment.
They won't hear it, obviously, because we didn't record it. But afterwards, Rick went, wow, I'm so inspired. I want to go and run up mountains. I was like, absolutely not. So let us know.
But yeah, I mean, we can get someone on talking about 24-hour track race and Rick will get all excited, so you know, it's
yeah,
different.
Quite excitable character,
just like a Labrador really.
Oh, quick one, if you were a dog, what kind of dog would you be?
Great question. Ben, absolutely great question. Where did you get that
one
from?
I was gonna say a Labrador, and then I feel like I'm just sort of proving.
I think golden retriever, Rick.
Oh, I did have a golden retriever growing up, actually. Brilliant dog. Yeah, I'll be that golden retriever.
That's where you got that energy from. Cocker spaniel. Just chaotic energy the whole time. Living with one. Yeah. Chaos. Pure chaos.
And yourself, Ben?
Don't know.
A dachshund.
No. Really, well, a sausage small dog.
I don't even know what it is, actually.
Struggles to get on the sofa.
I'm not sure. I'm comparatively...
Bad back.
Yeah. Huge. I'm a big guy. I don't think a sausage dog is particularly me. Sausage dog. Great.
Okay. Oh, that's
cool.
Good.
That's good.
Glad we've done that one. That was great talking to Elsie. I just think it was... it's really interesting when you meet... when we talk to athletes who have, as she explains, taken on the training herself. She had a great coach previously, but when she moved into trail, she explains that wasn't their area of expertise. So the kind of self-taught, self-coached element to it is always really interesting when you've got obviously great people out there who have got teams behind them and they lean on those heavily and they get great results. And then you've got someone who's doing the same thing, but on their own. And I'm kind of always intrigued by the training that they do.
50 miles a week as well, not big mileage for elite level running.
Yeah, exactly. To do 24, you know, a big round on 50 miles a week, it goes to show there's capabilities there.
Just spend 2 hours in the gym though, so
yeah, each gym session
2 hours
is 2 hours
a session in the gym, so probably more.
So
like
she mentioned a couple of times, didn't she, like this it's a Stairmaster, isn't it, which I've heard from a few people is a little bit of this underrated bit of kit in the gym. Like most people probably go around Stairmaster, like, I mean, not getting on that, but I think apparently for hills it's the one.
Yeah,
and for other than a hill. Millennials, people on TikTok love it, don't they?
Jane, you've really asked the right people here.
Yeah, you two just looked at me like, what's TikTok? But apparently it's like a trend for 2023. Everyone's on the Stairmasters.
Stairmasters have always been great. They've always been the thing. Ellipticals as well. Cross training. Just anyone who wants to get out there. I think they're just sort of mildly sort of like frowned upon because everyone wants to pretend that they're always just crushing the mileage out there. And they don't want to lose face and be all like, oh yeah, I just run everything. I'm just such a great runner.
Whereas I think actually, just the most boring thing you could ever going in the gym.
It's the Stairmaster.
Rick, you've just done the hand gestures for a...
That's a climber,
that's like
one,
a,
is it?
That's like Traversa a Versa climber. Climber. Mm. It's like a big... It's like the machine...
Stairmaster
like
is literally stairs. They're just the stairs.
Oh, I know the one. Yeah, that's terrible. Who does
yeah,
that?
Yeah, like an escalator that just keeps going forever. That's what Stairmaster is.
Elsie Davis, she does it. She does it. And she just did a midwinter Bob Graham round record room.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Listen to her, not us, is the moral of this story.
Other than Stairmasters, how's everyone's running going?
Fine. Good. Wrap that one up really quickly. Good. That was good. Good. Rick, you've been trying to organise a new adventure. Are we going to talk about that?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. So trying to organise the Capital Ring adventure. So long distance relay.
What is this Capital Ring you speak of?
Good question. It's a round in London, round kind of sort of zone 3 territory. So it's 72 miles, I think, or maybe slightly more in total.
Yeah.
And the idea is to do it in 12 hours and there'll be various legs people can have a go at. That's the hope. We haven't got a date in the diary yet, but that's the...
What I like about this is that every single part of that is very well already mapped, already has been existed for a long, long time. So we don't have to do any extra work.
Agreed. TfL have done the mapping, or I think the Ramblers maybe have done the mapping for us. So that's
great.
A big, big tick.
There you go.
In the box.
Yeah. See, so inspired by Elsie, we are taking on a very, very similar, not in the
similar length. It's a similar length.
Similar length. We're definitely not going to do it midwinter, and we'll do it as a relay because none of us could do it all on our own at once.
The ascent is roughly similar, I think, to the Bob Graham. I think it's about 26,000 feet or something. That's roughly the same as London Round.
Yeah, I think it's about 2,000 probably.
Probably not even that.
Yeah, it's probably. Right. Well, anyway, look, let's get our guest of the week on.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Elsie Davis, welcome back to the Runners World podcast. Great to have you on, and thanks very much for making the time to speak with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
You recently broke the female record for the Bob Graham Winter Round. For anyone who's sort of unaware of what that means, what exactly is a Bob Graham Winter Round?
So the Bob Graham is a 42-peak run around the Lake District. It's normally between 64 and 66 miles, depending on the route you take. It's essentially running around or power hiking, sliding on your bum around that as quickly as possible. And the winter round is set between obviously winter dates, and there's a separate category for midwinter and winter. There's quite a short window for midwinter, so that's the one I went into to make it as hard as possible.
Amazing, the midwinter, amazing, yeah.
And you're sometimes lucky with a good weather window in that time, but unfortunately,
yeah, you weren't
a single good weather window. I had to make the best of a bad week or a couple of weeks of weather and just choose the least worst day.
Though we saw pictures of you like wearing ski goggles. Like it was like that was the level that you were at. Like that was to give you an idea.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a panic buy. I didn't actually need those around, but they did come all the way around with me. So there was forecast for 50 to 60 mile per hour, constant wind. That wasn't gusts, Eesh. That was just wind. And hailstorms. The temperature was okay, but on tops it was like feels like -8 or -10 on the forecast. So the reason for the goggles was in case of, I guess, with wind like that and hailstorm, it's like a bit like BB pellets. So I wanted to protect my eyes.
And that was the best day, the best weather day.
Yeah, it really was.
What was the worst?
Yeah, it was so the next few days it was a lot of rain and I think essentially I thought as long as it was dry, it would make it easier. And it didn't rain that much actually on my round. It didn't, like the next few days and days before, there was like lots of heavy rain showers. But I think a lot of the success came from the fact that I never got cold, because it's easy to stay warm when it's not raining and you know the temperature without rain. But once you get soaked to the skin, no matter what you're wearing, it's just, it's awful. So I think not having that rain, even if it's those strong winds, I think that made a difference on that day. So yeah, I was just obsessively checking the weather forecast, like, to make sure it didn't change. Yeah, and I think I expected it to be tough because I knew what the weather was going to be like. So at no point did I go into it thinking it was going to be easy. So I think that helped psychologically just get on with things. Yeah, and I, growing up in Cornwall, I'm used to strong winds on the coast path. It's almost normal. So I think that kind of helped. But yeah, it was tough.
The last time we spoke to you was around COVID times, you were super fit, just about to do London Marathon, and then obviously lockdown rolled in and the race was cancelled and you were working on wards. How, just, you know, a brief summary of the last 3 years, how have you gone from that sort of time through now to running big ultras?
So this is my first ultra. I'd never run more than half of that distance or elevation in one run before. So that was another anxiety going into it. But I didn't really have time to think about that because I was worrying so much about the weather and other things. So yeah, when I spoke to you 3 years ago, I was mostly road running. But I guess in lockdown, I live near the Peak District, so I did like a lot more running on trails. And because it was pointless chasing times and stuff, I got more enjoyment from doing that. And I think I naturally just fell into it a little bit and then did a few trail races and did one in Switzerland in particular and just fell in love with it and haven't looked back. Don't miss road running too much. I still do it and I still am motivated to go and chase fast times and stuff, but I think just, yeah, the I've just fallen in love with the mountains and the places it takes me, and just, I feel happier as an athlete. I just feel like it's more suited to me. And then, yeah, so I've last year joined the North Face professional team. So that's helped me towards building a career even in running, which wasn't possible on roads. So now I'm actually not working as a doctor anymore. Temporarily, I'm taking a bit of just a break so I can focus on traveling to races and focus on training. I'll start up back again in August. But yeah, having a professional contract has helped me be able to pursue that a bit more. And yeah, and then the decision after a big season racing on the mountains was whether I try and get faster on the roads again or work on my weaknesses, which is steep hills and rocky terrain. So that's where I was like, well, I'm either going to do a road marathon and try and get under 2:30, which is what I was hoping for 3 years ago, or I just get stronger in the hills, which will help me next year maybe more than that. So yeah, that's where the Bob Graham came in. So I decided that would be a good way to kind of encourage me to get strong on that, and motivate me to get out in all the weathers and darkness to train for it. So, and I think it's helped, definitely.
Yeah, it seems to.
The Bob Graham is, so it's 28.
Yeah, right.
I'd hope so. It's 28,000 feet in total, the whole round, which is the equivalent of going up and down Everest. So, yeah, it was a lot of practicing on steep ascents and descents, getting your legs conditioned to that sort of battering. And a lot of it is power hiking. Like, you just cannot run up some of the ascents that are there. It's quicker to hike. So a lot of it was on the Stairmaster, just to get that continuous uphill steps. So yeah, it's been fun.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Was that the biggest adjustment, Elsie, then? Like going from being a very, very good road runner to being an excellent trail runner was like getting good on the hills. That was a bit that was missing.
I think there's very steep stuff because it's not like running as I know it. You're using completely different muscles and it's almost a completely different sport from that perspective. And it took me a long time to get used to running up stuff that's like 50% a gradient. And I was always trying to run up it, and I was told in the training for the Bob Graham with a friend I went looking at the route on, he sort of told me you can't try and run up these things, you'll just burn out of energy and it's really inefficient. I think that's been the biggest thing that I've had to work on. And I've had a lot of help from other trail runners and just learning as I go along and just throwing yourself into like races where you know that you're not going to be strong on, but you know that you'll learn a lot and get stronger from it. And I think as the mountain season went on last year, I just got stronger and stronger. Just through racing on it and getting the experience. And then my friend John Alban, who's also a North Face athlete, he's given me a lot of good advice. He's got an app actually that has loads of useful stuff, and I actually use that a lot to guide my training. So that involves kind of like drills that you use to get up the steep stuff faster, and it's something that he, I think, has learned from Killian Jornet. So it's like a technique where you do something called fast feet and then bounding. So you do like a minute of running up a really steep gradient, like a minute of like just moving your feet as fast as possible, not trying to get far up the hill, but just sort of treating the ground as lava, and then switching from that to bounding. So kind of, it doesn't have to be fast bounding, kind of slow bounding up the hill. So that helps increase your cadence going uphill, and then also gets you good at changing kind of your stride when you come to like rockier sections or the change in terrain. That's probably the newest thing I incorporated into my training, and I do think it has helped. Yeah. I think quite a few people have started using it, so it's not a secret. It's on his app.
Is it publicly available app then? This.
It is. Yeah, I think he's just. I'm not endorsed by it or anything. I actually like pay for it and things. It's like £20 a month, and I think there's a free version he just bought out now, and you can try it for free for a week. And that's what I did, and then after trying it, I liked it. It's really flexible as well, so it incorporates a lot of cross training. It's because I do quite a lot of that, I think anyone looking to get into mountain running, I'm feeling a bit lost of where you start to change any of your training from kind of a road background. It's got loads of useful information and videos. So.
Oh, that's very good. Cool. I didn't know anything about it. We'll have to get John on, have a chat about that.
Me neither. Yeah,
full of information. he's not afraid to share it. So definitely.
That's good. So at what point? Because we always see the end result. We always see that final sort of like the runner succeeding whenever these rounds take place. But like, at what point did you start planning it? How much work goes into sort of these huge undertakings? Because you finish the mountain season, but you've got you're committing to a large amount of time and effort to get these things right.
Yeah. I've wanted to do the round for a while, since I started trail running. In fact, I've always loved going to the Lake District and training there, and did my one leg probably around 3 years ago as well. And I was just like intrigued by it, and I did leg one without having much practice on trails at all, and I went up Skiddaw like way faster than you should have done. And then the rest of the round I was in like such a bad way. It was like, I didn't take any gels with me or anything. Which, you know, then burn through so much energy on the mountains and you need to take energy on. Whereas in the, on the road, I'd be more efficient, so I wouldn't need that kind of thing. But yeah, I had like a hyperglycemic attack going up Blencathra. I had to lie down on the side of the mountain.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's quite funny with that Skiddaw thing, because it's you know that Frog Graham round thing I had to go at last September, because it starts Skiddaw's the first one up there, and I had no idea how high it is. It's a mountain. I thought it was gonna take about half an hour to get up. It took us about 2.5 hours. It was like, oh right, it's like basically like going up Snowdon, you know, pretty much. Like
it's like a 5 mile. It's 5 miles, isn't it? Just up, pure up.
Yeah, and it's like, well, by Southeast standards, it's extremely steep the whole way. I was like, this is a day out in itself. This can't be the first thing. This is like going up and down Skiddaw's, like a, that's like a quite a active day out, I think. But
you were training
on it, right? I heard that you were going up and down it, like, you know, obviously multiple times as a part of, like, that was like a training run for you.
Yeah, Skiddaw's my favorite hill to race up, not race up, to train up, because it's fairly straightforward, it's quite runnable. Can't get lost, and the descent is not too technical, so there's not too much chance of like getting injured. So it's 20 miles if you go up twice, so I use it as like a key session before a race, to see where I'm at, because I know kind of where I should be on that hill, because I've used it so much. But yeah, you get walkers. It like blows their mind the first time you go past it, you're running up it. And then when you go past them again, just, going up again.
At that point, you're just taking the piss, aren't you? I mean, really, honestly.
I did that. So when I did leg one, and then coming off Halls Fell Ridge with a like low glucose, it was like, it's really quite sheer in places, and I had no idea, and I'm scared of heights as well. So I was kind of going down it on my bum, and then I was so tired by the end of that I had to get the bus back from there to Keswick, because there was a 2 mile run on the road back, but I physically didn't feel able. So it was a bit of an eye opener to see that, yeah, it's like just one leg of the Bob Graham is enough to put, you know, and at that point I was in really good shape. I was in like 33 minute 10K shape, because I think I'd done a 10K the week before. But it's enough to bring you to your knees if you're not used to that terrain and that elevation. It intrigued me to see if it was possible to get
for sure
that.
so did you from doing that first sort of effort, was it then 3 years really in the making to sort of leading up to the challenge, sporadically sort of dipping back into it?
I thought I'd probably do it as a retirement thing. I didn't think it was something I could realistically do. It wasn't something I thought I'd do as a record. It was only in the middle of my season, when I was thinking what I could do in the winter last year, that I decided to actually go for it. And I think, it was probably later in the summer that I decided. And then I started, once I did the World Championships in Thailand, I then put everything into it for a few months. So I spent quite a lot of time in the lakes in my camper van in the winter, getting used to the winter conditions, and I did the whole route over 5 days. I think that really helped, because it was all on tired legs, and it was, again, the most elevation I'd done in a week. Just got to know the route. I probably did each leg about two or three times individually before the round. Even though we have kind of pacers who show you the way, I think it's nice to get to grips with it on your own and have confidence that you can navigate it on your own if you need to. It was after the World Champs, it was very much going out to the Lake District, and then, yeah, a lot of Stairmaster, a lot of leg strengthening and conditioning on descents.
So I'm a runner who actively avoids hills in my life, and from everything you've said, this does not sound fun. I mean, you're scared of heights, you had to get a bus down, this all just sounds so traumatic to me. But you have really found joy, it sounds like, in this kind of running. Do you think you'll go back to roads, or is this it now? Is this what you love?
I don't think I'll ever go back to road purely. I'll probably run on road to because some of the best mountain runners in the world are incredibly fast runners as well. So you need to have road speed. So like there's Nienke Brinkman, who's one of the best mountain runners, and she's got like a 2:26 marathon or something. So you have to, it's like you have to be fast and strong. So I think I would, and I still do enjoy running on the roads, and I do like one road session every few weeks still. But yeah, I've definitely fallen in love with the mountain running scene and just the people and the places.
And do you think it is removing that like time? Like everyone knows what a good marathon time is, but I couldn't tell you what a good time is to climb this mountain. Do you know what I mean? Is it removing that pressure and that time element that's helped you love it more?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because I think I'd been running on roads quite a while and chasing times. You started to feel the pressure, even in training. Yeah. You have a bad session and you don't hit the times you're meant to, you go away feeling a bit down. Whereas you don't really notice that in the mountains. You feel if you feel a bit off, but you don't like put pressure on yourself to do it in X amount of time. So I like the break from that pressure, definitely.
But on the flip of that, does 2:30 still sit there as a sort of something that you would want to chase?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I don't think I'll be going for a Ramsey round or anything next winter, so we'll just face, because I think Seville's a good winter marathon to try and go for that. So that was my B plan. So maybe that'll be next winter's goal.
I'm interested, Elsie, what your running week now looks like, because say you throw in a road based session maybe once a fortnight. So what does, you have to go into in exact detail, but what does a rough week look like for you when you're training in for a trail race?
Yeah, so it varies, and I'm now self-coached since running on trails, so I can be flexible with it. And I, like I said, I use the Alban app to give me some guidance, but again, that's a very flexible thing and you can add your own stuff in. So a lot of it is kind of, so I have, it depends what kind of phase I am in the build up. So now in coming off the back of Bob Graham and early in the season, I'll be like on a base building phase. So it'll be lots of kind of steady running, lots of tempo running, and that'll be flat and hilly, and lots of strengthening. So I use the gym twice a week for like leg strengthening and things like that, and then a one core session a week, and I won't do anything too hectic in the base building phase because I don't need to be sharp for races and it has a higher kind of injury risk. So it's just building that endurance engine. And there'll be like two endurance runs a week or sessions, because one day a week I don't run at all. I use my bike instead just because of my history with injuries. And I never run double days anymore because of, again, my injury history. So I like the second, I do train twice a day most days, but the second one will be on like the bike or the watt bike, depending on what the weather's like. So now that would be kind of 6 to 8 weeks of just building that big kind of endurance base. And then as I start getting closer to races, I'll start doing shorter, sharper stuff. So like an uphill fartlek type thing where I try and find a continuous uphill. Like Skiddaw is perfect for that because it's just up, up, up. Getting your legs used to just, because it was my calves that used to just feel like they were going to explode to begin with. So you're just getting used to going up continuously and building different speeds into that. And then every 2 weeks I'll still do kind of some flat reps on the road, or so like 20 times 400 with a short recovery in between, that sort of thing. And then that's where the leg conditioning stuff comes in. The closer I get to races, so that's the fast feet and bounding type sessions, and then start to build in kind of race specific sessions. So that would be within my long run, where I'll do perhaps 90 minutes at race pace on similar terrain. So I'll do like 90 minutes easy or steady, and then I'll do 90 minutes at race pace, practicing nutrition, things like that, which I call more of like a race specific session. And I say I only run about 50 miles a week.
Oh.
I say only because I used to run 100.
Yeah.
So yeah, and a lot of it is supplemented with cross training, and I think that's been a key for me the last few years of not getting injured barely at all, is just reacting to how your body feels. Because I'm now coaching myself, I'm able to just realize when I'm not feeling good, and I like back off the next day and I readjust my plan because I set it, so it makes it easier. Whereas if previously when someone else set my plan, I was kind of felt I had to stick to it, and even if I didn't feel good, I was quite bad at backing off when I should have done.
That's a fascinating side of the sort of trends within running on a training perspective, and how the sort of the educated athlete feels actually more, you know, empowered to take it upon themselves to manage their own training and their bodies, because they realize what they're capable of, rather than the sort of solely having a coach who's just prescribing things for you to do. And you're obviously a prime example of how that's paid dividends, because you know exactly how your body best responds to load, and you've worked out the best way to do it. Was that quite a liberating thing, just suddenly going, do you know what, I can do this on my own?
Yeah, and I think it gives me the responsibility as well. It's like, it's my fault if things go wrong, and it's entirely my responsibility. So yeah, I think that has helped me take notice of what the benefit of each session is and why I'm doing it, like thinking about the why, rather than just blindly going along with something. But having said that, I can only do that because of the tools that my old coaches, particularly my last coach, Helen Clitheroe, gave me. And obviously, as soon as I went to mountain running, it was completely out of her area of expertise. She's a steeplechase. She used to be steeplechase and road and track, so we agreed it was best that I kind of went my own way.
She was the education. She gave you that sort of knowledge, and then you were able to just plow on.
Yeah, build on it. Yeah. So it would be hard to do that without having previously been coached or given the tools to. So. Yeah, I'm not sort of, to any new runners, I'm not saying that it's great.
Crack on, guys. Just get
down with coaches.
Now get on with it.
What are your plans, Elsie, for the rest of 2023 then? What's it look like for you?
I'm just planning at the minute. So I've just had a week off so far, and probably another week just cycling this week. And then I'm going to go back to doing shorter mountain races, I think. I know I'm not going to do any more ultras this year. So I'm quite keen to do some of the Golden Trail Series races again. They're pretty cool, and they do some iconic races like Sierra Zonal and Mont Blanc Marathon, Zagama, like all the kind of big races on the scene that you always sort of dream of doing. And there's some that I missed last year that I want to do. And then I think I'm going to do, well, I've got the World Championships in June, which is in Innsbruck, in Austria. So that would be the next big target, I think. And then after that is UTMB week. So I'll probably do OCC again, which is the shortest one, which is, like 55K, but I'll go back to that because I did that last year, but struggled a lot with the heat at the end.
Where's the Southwest Coast Path FKT fitting into things? Just trying to work it out.
Yeah, it's so I think
that's 2024
TBC, I think, on that one.
Yeah. TBC.
Take like 5 or 6 days? I think the record 6 days. After 20 hours was enough time to make.
I was going to ask, because you know you did the winter Bob Graham, we've got the winter spine races currently underway. Does that sort of do you have any, you know, you've obviously don't mind being that cold, so have you got any sort of, like, is there a grand ambition there to sort of these sort of, you know, stretch it longer than a day, make it, you know, these multi-day things?
Not especially at the minute. No. I can see the draw and I can see how you can get addicted to it, but yeah, I just feel like
oh, it looks horrible.
I didn't feel too healthy at the end of that Bob Graham.
No.
I think for now it's a no.
Yeah, but
fair. Never say never.
Correct answer, I would say.
Correct answer, yeah. Well, thanks so much for making the time to come on the Runners World podcast talking about the Bob Graham winter round, but also just a sort of transition from road to trail. We hope it continues to be such a massive success. I'm sure it will be. So thanks very much for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Elsie Davis, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/Runner's World Podcast to get this exclusiveness offer. And if 3 issues isn't enough, just subscribe for a year, guys. It's just the best thing you can possibly do.
And you can continue listening to the Runner's World UK podcast on Acast, iTunes, all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK and please do subscribe. Thanks for listening and we'll see you again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.